More Iowa high school students go on to college than graduates of public education systems in other states. Does that mean Iowa has the best schools? It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today, we start our education series by taking stock of public education here in Iowa. How successful are our schools? How do we measure success? And is funding adequate? We'll hear from educators and from a Des Moines-based author who moved back to Iowa so her kids could go to school here. Share your experience this hour. Did public education in the state measure up for you and your kids? How would you like to see it changed? Join our conversation. First, this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Iowa's graduation rate from high school is first in the nation, and more Iowa high school students go on to college than graduates of public education systems in other states. So does this mean Iowa has the best schools in the nation? That's one of the questions we'll be looking at, an overarching question today as we start our education series by taking stock of public education here in Iowa, K through 12. How successful are our schools? How do we even measure success? Is our funding adequate? What are some trends that we should be paying attention to? Later in the hour, we'll be hearing from educators and also throughout the hour from a Des Moines-based author who moved back to Iowa so her kids could go to school here. Perhaps you have a pertinent personal experience as a student here in Iowa or as a parent who has been heavily involved in your school. Perhaps you can tell us something about the quality of Iowa's public schools based on your personal experience. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Joining us, first of all, Peggy Carr, with the she's National Center for Education Statistics Associate Commissioner. Thank you for joining us for a few minutes, Peggy.
Thank you. You're welcome.
We'd like to get flesh this out a little bit of Iowa's education, public education, where it sits statistically and in comparison to other states in the nation. How do we measure school success?
Well, Iowa participates in the National Assessment of Educational Progress, also known as NAEP. It's the nation's report card. It's been around for a while. Started back almost 50 years ago. The state program that Iowa participated in started back in 1990. The way to sort of think about Iowa's participation in other states is that they're taking a common measure, a common yardstick. All the same items are administered across the nation to schools in the various states. And so it's a common metric of how students in Iowa compare to other states and the nation.
Mm-hmm. So describe a little bit of the parts of that metric, that yardstick.
Well, the requirement is for states to participate in reading and math, fourth and eighth grade. The assessments are challenging assessments, and they have standards that have been placed on them in terms of basic, proficient, and advanced performance.
Mm-hmm. So tell us, how does Iowa measure when you put it up next to this metric, this yardstick?
Well, I should say that Iowa has been making progress over time since it started back in the 1990s. So they've, over the long run, we could say that Iowa is steadily improving, particularly in math. But the nation has caught up with Iowa. At one point, Iowa was at the top of the heap. Top of the mountain, so to speak. But in the past 10 years, the past decade, Iowa has not improved in any of the grade subjects comparisons that we could talk about here, fourth and eighth grade reading and math. So there's some progress to be made in more recent years, I think. Iowa has not made the progress that it once had.
Mm-hmm. At the outset, I mentioned Iowa's graduation rate from high school, first in the nation. Also, more of our college high school graduates go on to college than other states. Do you have any more statistics in that regard? I mean, what does that tell us?
Well, I think Iowa has a lot to be proud of when it comes to graduation rates. We do collect those data at the National Institute of Statistics nationwide. In 2016, the graduation rate was 84.4, mm-hmm. and Iowa's 91.3. So, you know, kudos for Iowa there.
You broke up a little bit. It was 90 what again?
91.3. They were the only state with graduation rates that high.
Mm-hmm.
So you're absolutely right when it comes to graduating their students out of the secondary school into post-secondary.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we do have some information on preparedness. And again, Iowa students are holding pretty close to what the nation is looking like back in 2013, when we measured 12th grade participation and their scores on reading and math. It looks like Iowa students, about 40% of them are prepared in reading and about 46% are prepared in math for post-secondary college and career readiness.
Mm-hmm. Do you have statistics there on funding for education?
Did you say funding?
Funding, yes.
Do have statistics on funding, but not with me,
mm-hmm.
So I can't speak to the finance part. But I can tell you that the National Center for Education Statistics collects abundance of data on financial data for all of the states and school districts as well, as it turns out.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have those in front of me today.
Peggy Carr, before we say goodbye, tell us about some other perhaps trends you're seeing in the statistics that you keep, trends that either Iowa is part of or not part of.
Well, I think I would be remiss if I did not say that Iowa, while still slightly above in math and sort of holding steady in reading, a lot of the other states have been leapfrogging around Iowa.
Mm.
Since the 1990s, several states, including some of the Midwestern states, have been producing double-digit gains in math, and Iowa's is holding steady in the below 10-point range. So Iowa has some work to do. We have a significant increase in the population of minorities in Iowa, but it doesn't look like that's really the issue because the white students are showing not a lot of improvement over the same period, the same time period.
Mm-hmm. When you look at Iowa statistics and break it out in terms of, well, race or gender, does anything interesting pop out for you?
Well, white students, yes, it does. In math, for example, white students have not declined, but the black students have declined, the females have declined, the low-income students have declined. That's really where I think Iowa needs to do a little bit more work in getting those scores up.
Okay. Peggy Carr, thank you for giving us a picture of Iowa in the national context. Peggy Carr, National Center for Education Statistics Associate Commissioner. We appreciate your time, Peggy.
You're certainly welcome.
Bye now. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Our education series kicking off today. We're sort of looking at where Iowa stands in terms of our public education. Let's invite you once again with your thoughts, your personal experiences, either being educated in Iowa. Perhaps you were educated K through 12 in Iowa and you've become a parent in the meantime and you've had kids go through a public system in Iowa and you want to make a sort of a comment, a comparison of how it was for you compared to how it is for your kids today. What would you like to tell us? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Now joining us, Ryan Wise. He's the director of the Iowa Department of Education. Good day to you, Ryan.
Good day to you, Ben. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Pleasure to have you on the show. We just heard from Peggy Carr there. I don't know if you'd like to react to what she had. She said, I mean, what came through there is in a number of areas, Iowa has some work to do.
Yeah, you know, certainly we have work to do. And at the same time, we have an incredibly strong education system. And, you know, I would agree with a lot of what Peggy is saying. I think the data bears that out. We're improving, but there's opportunities to grow more. And I think we see that particularly in ensuring that all students have the same opportunity to achieve and that are performing at similarly high levels. So ensuring that regardless of race, ethnicity, income, gender, that all students have those high-quality educational opportunities is critically important.
Mm-hmm. What would you say to the points where she said that we need improvement, specifically to any of those points where other states are leapfrogging us, I think she said, and she also said a number of places where we're kind of losing ground among certain groups?
Right. So over the last 6 years, Iowa has been very systematic in putting in place the pieces for educational success that we've seen high-performing educational systems have. So, for example, a focus on foundational skills like early literacy. Back in 2012, the legislature passed and Governor Branstad signed a comprehensive piece of legislation that focused on early literacy. And then in 2013, we saw another piece of significant education reform that put into place the nation's most comprehensive teacher leadership system. And even though that was passed in 2013, we're still only at the very beginning of the third year of full implementation. So we only have a couple years into these really, I think, well-defined, comprehensive and thorough approaches to strengthening our education system in Iowa.
Mm-hmm. As director of the Iowa Department of Education, are you looking at other states, maybe specifically Midwestern states, for what their successes are telling us, or perhaps we can model after them in some cases?
Sure. I think we always look at, you know, what are high-performing states, you know, Massachusetts, Minnesota often come up. But we've looked globally as well and looking at, you know, high-performing provinces in Canada and other countries. Singapore comes to mind. But I think a lot of those lessons that we've learned, like I said, back in 2012, 13, 14, we took a lot of those lessons and really started to build a system that says, okay, if we prepare our students early on with those foundational literacy skills, if we ensure they're graduating at high rates, that they don't need a lot of remedial or developmental education once they enter post-secondary, and that they have great teaching throughout the system, we know our students are going to be successful. So those are the things we've really focused in on over time. And we're starting to see some results. You know, we've surveyed over 17,000 teachers to ask what impact is teacher leadership having in your classroom. And teachers are saying it's improving instruction, that they're feeling positive about the climate and culture because teachers have a greater voice in educational decision-making within their schools. We're also seeing, you know, some of those measures I mentioned on early literacy. You know, we at this point only have 2 years of data on our statewide results since the early warning system has been in place. And we know that almost 14,000 students who are below the reading benchmark in kindergarten through third grade in the 15-16 school year, when we measured them in the fall, by the end of the 16-17 school year, those 14,000 students were now at or above the reading benchmark.
You mentioned
it's important.
Yeah. It's important. Finish your sentence. I'm sorry for interrupting.
It's important to look holistically at, you know, what are the opportunities that students have and how are they performing on a range of measures.
Ryan, what I wanted you to elaborate on, a couple of things you said there that people may not be very acquainted with. If you can quickly tell us what the early warning system is that you mentioned.
Sure. So the early warning system is a reading screener given three times a year to students in kindergarten through third grade. That's a quick measure to see if the students are on track to reading proficiently by the end of third grade. So it's a way for teachers to tell which students need additional supports, which students to reach out to their families to engage them in the process, and then to ensure that there are the instructional methods and opportunities available to all students, but that those students who need more support receive that support.
You also mentioned teacher leadership. Tell us about that, and I believe it's fairly unique to Iowa, isn't it?
It is in terms of the comprehensiveness we have in Iowa. So we have more than 10,000 teachers who are in designated and compensated teacher leadership roles, where they're taking on positions such as an instructional coach that would work with teachers full-time to improve their teaching methods. Model teachers who are in modeling and demonstrating effective teaching practices, and mentor teachers. I know of no other state that's invested at the level Iowa has. We have more than $160 million now annually that goes specifically to building the teacher leadership system. And all of our 333 school districts have a locally developed teacher leadership plan. So when I'm out in schools every single week, I see so much enthusiasm and collegiality of teachers working together in a very systematic way to strengthen their instruction.
Mm-hmm. And so it matters that it's not just handed from the top down to teachers, that they really shape it, right?
Exactly. You know, I was a high school social studies teacher for 5 years, and oftentimes the professional development, like you said, was very top-down, and it didn't directly relate to what was actually happening in my classroom.
Mm-hmm.
Now, teachers have a voice. They shape that. The professional learning is embedded within their job. They actually have the opportunity to go and practice what they learn and then to reflect on that with a colleague, and it makes a huge difference. In how teachers approach the practice of teaching.
A couple of other things I wanted to make sure we got to, Ryan, before we leave this conversation. Future Ready Iowa. But first, a few words from you about testing. Many of us knew the Iowa test of basic skills growing up. It's something else now, isn't it?
Yes. There is a new assessment. The Iowa Statewide Assessment of Student Progress, and that will be rolled out this spring. It's the new assessment designed by Iowa Testing Programs, which will be delivered by Iowa Testing in partnership with Pearson. So Iowa schools can expect a brand new statewide assessment come this spring.
Okay, the name's different. What about the content? How will it be a different battery of tests?
Sure. So the focus and the content of this new exam is really on ensuring tight alignment between the assessment itself and Iowa's academic standards, so that what's being taught in the classroom is reflected in what's being assessed on the test itself.
Okay. So let's talk about Future Ready Iowa. This is one of the governor's top priorities. Tell us about its goals and how it's being implemented.
Sure. So Future Ready Iowa has the ambitious goal that by 2025, 70% of Iowans in the workforce will have education or training beyond high school. And the centerpiece of Future Ready Iowa, and this comes out of the work of the Future Ready Iowa Alliance that met for the better part of a year, issued several recommendations last year, and now are moving forward. And the centerpiece of it will be the last dollar scholarship that will come into place a year from now. But there are many other components of it, specifically education related, that I think are really exciting. You know, we see through that a focus on work-based learning. This is an exciting opportunity that where in our schools, students actually have the chance to put into practice what they're learning in the classroom with experiences on job sites. And so one of the examples of that is the virtual clearinghouse for work-based learning, which was funded as part of the Future Ready Iowa Act, which appropriated funds so that we can create a statewide, essentially, clearinghouse, where if there are opportunities in businesses for students to get involved, regardless of geography, schools and students could look and say, hey, there's a great project for our students to become involved in. And so I think that will make better connections between the learning that's happening in classrooms and what businesses and industry need to be successful and to grow in Iowa.
Right. And remind us, Ryan, we have a great need for a skilled workforce. We have a lot of good jobs out there for those with the right skills, right?
Oh, absolutely. There's a huge need, and that's what our education system is designed to ensure our students have the skills, the knowledge and skills necessary to fill those jobs. And so part of Future Ready Iowa is about expanding, like I said, work-based learning opportunities, mm-hmm. expanding apprenticeship opportunities, having summer youth internships. There are a number of opportunities that I think will build those connections between education and the workforce. And this fall, you'll see a series of regional summits for Future Ready Iowa that will allow communities to come together and have a conversation about, you know, how do they improve education and workforce training locally? What are the goals they need to really achieve success?
You mentioned the goal is to have 70% of Iowa workers obtain education or training beyond high school by the year 2025, according to Future Ready Iowa. That compares to just 60% in 2014. So that's a bump up of 10 percentage points from 2014 to 2025. What do you foresee as the biggest hurdles to moving that up significantly, nudging it up?
You're right. It's an ambitious goal, but one that I think is entirely achievable. And, you know, to me, it's a series of hurdles, right, that I think are overcomable. It's ensuring our students have, again, those foundational skills, those literacy skills that will allow them to access and excel in more challenging curriculum as they move through the educational system. It also means ensuring that, you know, building off our extremely high graduation rate, which Peggy mentioned earlier in the program, we lead the nation in graduation rate. And so now it's ensuring that our students have the skills when they graduate to achieve post-secondary success. And we see, you know, the number of students needing developmental or remedial education dropping, and we want to see that number continue to shrink. And then I would also say it's ensuring our students have the educational opportunities that align with the growing job demands. So, for example, computer science.
Right.
Critically important skill. We're upping our opportunities for students in computer science.
Ryan, before you go, I have to ask you about funding. We have teachers, we'll hear later on in the program. Why should teachers have to, as a matter of course, buy from their own money basic materials for their classroom?
Sure. So we know funding is always a part of this conversation, that it's, you know, the funding and opportunity are often linked. And that's why I think, you know, the work around teacher leadership raised the minimum starting salary across Iowa. It also created additional opportunities for compensation for, like I said, more than 10,000 teachers. And so I think there are a number of efforts to really ensure teachers are fairly compensated for the incredible work they do every single day in our classroom.
Ryan Wise, Director of the Iowa Department of Education, thank you for joining us this half hour.
Thank you for inviting me, Ben. I appreciate it.
When we come back in a moment, we'll talk with two educators, Art Tate, the superintendent of Davenport Schools, and Mike Baronic, the president of the Iowa State Education Association. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. And we're back midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, kicking off our education series as school starts around the state, looking at public education in the state, taking stock of it. How successful are our schools? Is the funding adequate? How do we measure success anyway? Are we preparing our kids adequately for a modern, quickly changing workforce? You can join our conversation with your questions, with your experiences as a student or perhaps as a parent or as a teacher. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org is our email. Joining us this half hour, Mike Baranek is president of the Iowa State Education Association. He taught third grade in West Des Moines for 30 years. He's on a three-year sabbatical to be president of the Iowa State Education Association. We want to welcome you to the program today, Mike.
Well, thank you, Ben. Thank you for having me, and good afternoon to you and your listeners.
Thank you. Art Tate is with us as well, the superintendent of Davenport Schools. Art Tate, welcome to the program, and I believe this is you're going into your final year here. You've started your final year as Davenport superintendent.
Hi, Ben. Hi, Mike. Yes, this is my final year. This is my eighth year.
Very good. Well, we'll look forward to your observations here. I wanted to start off with someone we had in the studio a little bit earlier, a Des Moines-based author. She had great words for you in particular, Mike Baranek, because evidently in grade school you taught some of her kids. It's not part of this tape, but I had to pass that on. She was full of effusive applause for your work in the classroom. Here she is talking about why she moved back to Iowa with her husband. Her husband was entering dental school, and she wanted her kids to go to school here.
There's the urban legend, right, that Iowa has wonderful schools.
Right.
And I knew that growing up, that was part of the narrative of my own growing up. But then when I got to college and further, I realized that there was some truth to that, mm-hmm. that it wasn't just a legend because in part because I was teaching in other schools and in other states, and I saw the comparison in the quality of the education, and also in the resources poured into education. Mm-hmm. There was a difference. It was a palpable difference, and so I got to see that as an educator myself.
And what did you teach?
I taught Spanish mm-hmm. and ESL.
Okay, there you have it. Words of a parent and a former teacher there. Mike, to what extent is this this legend backed up by actual data and your experience of 30 years of teaching?
Well, I appreciate you letting me know that you had someone on this morning that had me in classroom. I have traveled all over the country through various positions that I have held, and I've witnessed what happens in other states and in other classrooms, and I come back, and each time that I return to the state, I share with my colleagues that they are doing a tremendous job of educating our children for the upcoming century, and that they're working incredibly hard, and they are dedicated and driven to ensure that every child in their classroom succeeds. And so the data that I have, Ben, is the joy that I see in a student's eyes as they're learning to read and making the connection between that reading material and their own lives, and then how they're putting their own thoughts into action and making relationships that last for them with not only their peers, but through that content that they're learning.
Mm-hmm. In just a moment, I want to go to our phones. We have a number of listeners who want to get in on this conversation. But Art Tate, superintendent of Davenport Schools, broadly speaking, how do you think Iowa measures up in terms of delivering a quality public education?
Well, you know, I want to go back to the story about people leaving and coming back. I hear it over and over and over. It is certainly a theme here in Davenport. And they come back because they've left, they've seen other places, and they know the education they had mm-hmm. Here in Davenport and Iowa, and they want to come back and put their children through that. So I think that speaks volume. That's the greatest accolade we could have, is people want their children to be in our school systems. And I'm glad to be a superintendent in Iowa.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how long of you have here in Iowa, Art. I know Mike does, but Mike, are we sought out for our education system because we're continuing to be as good as we used to be, or just because other education systems pale a little bit by comparison? Are we consistent? Do you know what I mean? You've taught for 30 years.
I do think that we are sought out, and part of that is because of our reputation, but it also has to do with how we are as a state understanding how to focus on each child. And we are working very hard in the classrooms to meet the needs of students. It has changed over the years, of course. The needs of students have increased in terms of mental health and where they're getting their food from and where they're sleeping at night. And so it's making the job more difficult. Funding has not kept up with the demands that are required of public schools now. And I think teachers understand the importance of trying to make up for that lack of funding through their initiatives and efforts. But yes, I can personally say that where I have taught, we have had a number of people return back to the state so their children can go through our system, K-12, because of the quality of education we offer here.
Let's turn to our listeners now. We've been asking to have you share your thoughts, personal experiences, questions as we discuss the quality of Iowa's public schools. Gene is with us calling from Davenport, 1-866-780-9100. Gene, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I would like to make just a few comments with respect to Davenport, education in Davenport. I would like to indicate that I believe that Dr. Tate has done a wonderful job with our students and teachers in Davenport. And in tandem to that, I would also like to ask that we get additional support from our leadership at the state level and at the federal level. Unfortunately, I feel like the legislature has done a few things that haven't been in our best interest for education for kids in terms of, you know, letting districts determine their own academic calendar, taking away some collective bargaining rights. And currently, as I understand, Davenport does get less funding per student, mm-hmm. around $175 per student, that's less, and those types of dollars are critically important to helping our students. I think we also need to be open about the fact that our students of color and sometimes our students facing homelessness and poverty are students that we continue to need to reach out to and support them and their families, you know, in their efforts to get a good education.
Okay.
At the federal level, I'm sorry.
Quickly, Gene, we have other callers. Thank you, though.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
Okay, Gene, we'll leave it there then. Thanks. Gene calling from Davenport. Art Tate, superintendent of Davenport Schools, nice words for your work there, but she referenced the funding. In 2015, you took a stand. You declared that Davenport School District would actually break state law and spend more money on students' educations. Give us a quick primer on what is the formula that is used for school districts and how Davenport, in this case, came out on the short end, and I think still does.
Well, I'll give you the elevator talk. Back in the 70s, it was a great idea. The state wanted to equalize spending, so they actually put a ceiling on spending for students. And they said, you can't spend any more than that, and that's what the state is going to help you with. And at the same time, they took the onus off of local property taxes in order to do that. Unfortunately, at the time they did it, there were some districts that were already above the ceiling they set, and they let that remain. So from the very beginning, there was between the highest districts that could spend the most in the state and about 164 other districts, a $175 difference. And that's just never changed. It's never been addressed. And my effort was to ask the legislature, let's address it. It's been there a long time. My district lost over that time about $140 million. Every year it's $2.7 million. So it's a matter of equality, and I was just asking them to address that.
Mm-hmm. Was it adequately addressed in your eyes?
No, there was a one-year fix with a few dollars attached to it, with no promise for the future. So I do appreciate the efforts. I appreciate the philosophy that this has got to be fixed. I'm just waiting to see what happens in the next session.
Mm. All right. Mike Baranek, talk a little bit about your experience with funding and the position of the Iowa State Education Association. It's expected that teachers now, I guess, pay for several hundred dollars of materials out of their own pockets.
Oh, yes, Ben. There are teachers all over the state that are spending money out of their own pockets to buy materials and resources that they need to do their jobs.
How did we get there?
Well, we have not kept up our allowable growth, has, or as I say, has not kept up with the rate of inflation. And so we have woefully neglected the funding stream to public schools for their general accounts that will buy paper, that will allow for the hiring of associates, for more teachers. I mean, there were a few years ago, we went through quite a pink slip drama here in the state because of the funding cuts that had been made, and schools couldn't afford to maintain the personnel that they had. Mm-hmm. And so when that happens, then your class sizes are larger, and you are not able to work with children on a one-on-one basis. And so over the years, because we have not kept up with our funding stream, it has made it much harder for schools to bring kids up to where we want them to be.
Mm-hmm. Before we go to the phones, Gene, back to the phones, Gene in Davenport mentioned the collective bargaining. How has the, this to you, Mike, the collective bargaining legislation that was passed in last year affected teacher morale, recruitment? What has been the impact?
It's demoralized my entire profession. We worked with Governor Ray many years ago to establish our collective bargaining rights, and we had a voice at the table when it came to...
This was in the 1970s.
Yes, sir. And we had a voice at the table, and many places around the state we still do in terms of what's happening in the classroom. But I can certainly tell you that there are students who have thought about entering college prep programs throughout the state that are giving that a second thought because of what has happened over the course of the past 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Art Tate, can you echo that?
Absolutely. It certainly has had a detrimental effect. And it's just something, you know, teacher morale is something we want to protect. And
do you see it filtering down, Art, to the quality of that education, impacting that?
I have not noticed that. Our teachers are professionals, and even though they may have a bad feeling about something, I certainly have not noticed that, and I wouldn't expect it. You know, teachers need to be paid at a fair rate, and we were one of the districts, as soon as that legislation was passed, that we instantly went into a two-year contract with our teachers to give them some protection.
Mm. Okay, let's go to our phones. We want to make sure we have plenty of voices on our phones with perspectives. Bill is with us in Des Moines. Hi, Bill. We have a number of callers and running out of time. We're sure glad you joined us.
Okay, I'll make it brief. With a 1% allowable growth rate, we can't keep small schools in Iowa in existence. Most schools have declining enrollment, and they don't even get a 1% allowable growth rate. Plenty of data shows that small schools in Iowa can perform as well as larger schools. And then we have an unevenness in some of the Des Moines metro area. We have high schools with more than 1,000 students. That's too big. Plenty of data shows that smaller schools and smaller class sizes, teachers can better meet the needs of students and help every student achieve.
All right. Bill in Des Moines, thank you very much for your view. Talk a little bit, Mike, perhaps you could tell us about the funding. It's been increased by, what, 1%, 1% to 2%?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. So what should it be? Are you in agreement with that? Is that adequate?
Oh, it should be about 4.5%. Yes, I'm in complete agreement with what your caller just had mentioned. When you've got class sizes that are reaching 25, 30, 35 students, and you have one instructor for a high school classroom of 35 kids, then if you've got semester tests or literature pieces that you have to grade, it just makes it even more difficult when you've got that many kids that you have to focus on. And those students aren't receiving the one-on-one contact that they need with that instructor to advance their learning. And so, yes, everything that caller just mentioned was absolutely correct.
Mm. Okay, let's go to Davenport. Jeff is with us in Davenport. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, just wanted to get your guest comments about after-school and summer learning. I think we should be really proud of the K-12 system we have in Iowa, but I think a lot of research shows that significant learning happens during those out-of-school hours and summer months, and just wanted to know what our plans are for really building a world-class after school and summer learning program in Iowa, especially for Iowans in our rural communities. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Jeff, in Davenport. Art, is that something you can tackle and comment on?
Well, it's absolutely critical, especially for our students who may not have someone at home or may not have a family unit that can help them with their education. The after-school programs are absolutely critical. And for summer, we actually have a great DEER grant that has helped us with our summer program because both are needed. Our students need as much exposure to teaching as practical.
Mm-hmm. It seems one of the areas that's very successful is this leadership, this mentorship that's happening on among in the students, in the teachers, among the teachers here in Iowa. Kim Stewart, a Des Moines-based author, parent, and former educator herself, commented about this when I talked with her earlier today. Let's hear what she had to say.
You can feel very isolated as a classroom teacher. You know, a lot of your day is spent on your own, you know, trying to wrangle kids and try to work lessons out and try to do, you know, move things forward on your own. And so to have a colleague, or even better, a group of colleagues cheering you on and saying, this is what I've done, this is what works and what has not, that allows for so much more freedom in the classroom and absolutely for longer retention. That's a hard job. Teaching is a hard job. It definitely requires a community of people saying, you can do this. Keep on.
Mike Baranek, that's a bright spot in Iowa, among Iowa educators, right?
Oh, yes. Our teacher leadership program is really quite well known across the country, and it is doing very good things for our teachers and educators in our buildings, and it will have direct effect on student achievement. Bill, Ben, can I just mention one thing? When you had talked about after-school programs and all-year-round kind of things, school districts understand the importance of making sure that we have after-school programming. Unfortunately, because of the lack of funding that has occurred, we are counting on community resources more and more. And for example, United Way here in central Iowa does a fabulous job of helping with programming in our schools, and the Des Moines schools especially, regarding reading in the early years. And so while I think it's great that we are looking towards our community members to help us to engage and to work outside of the normal classroom day, we could be doing more of that kind of thing if we had the appropriate funding.
Right. And you know, Art, those school sessions are really important, especially when you have two parents working, right? Otherwise, kids are left to what? What is the alternative out there for them?
Well, it's not a good alternative. So absolutely, we'd rather have them in the school, and it's certainly not all work after school, but there is an element of keeping their eye on academics.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Tim is in Iowa City. Thanks for waiting, Tim. Our final caller for the hour. What point did you want to mention?
Thank you for taking my call. I've been blessed to have several children go to the Iowa City Community School District, as well as being a head of a private school. I've also been to the legislature and tried to get more funding for schools. I will tell you, as a tax accountant, I have been stunned over the years to see the amount of additional money that teachers have had to pay out of their pockets to supply the necessary things for their classroom. We're blessed in Iowa. We've got world-class educators who are dedicated. They're going to bleed for their children. And I really believe we're taking advantage of them. I listened to the Secretary of Education talking about, well, the funding, we're paying them more. The question was not answered.
No, it wasn't.
Great schools. We're eating our seed corn, though, because that's not going to continue.
Okay, Tim in Iowa City, thanks for your perspective. A few final thoughts from Mike Baranek and Art Tate. Perhaps you can go first. Art, you'll be retiring after this year. What are your longer-term concerns for education in Iowa, in Davenport, and so on, as you prepare to leave your office?
Well, a few. First, we need to continue the teacher leadership system. It's the best thing in the nation, and don't let that falter. And we have got to find a way to fund education. I mean, you ask how much do we need? 3% would be wonderful. I mean, it costs 3 to 4% increases annually, and we have got to have the legislation keep up with that, or we're just going to eat away at our districts. And lastly, just keep a focus on all means all. Every student's important, and we have to keep that in mind as we teach them and as they learn in our classrooms.
Mike Baranek, I can give you about 30 seconds for some closing remarks.
Well, I just want to remind our listeners that Iowa has a proud tradition of educating kids here in our state, and I think we continue with that. I do want to remind everyone out there, though, that it takes a community. We need to have community involvement. Parents need to be involved. We need to have volunteers, because the teacher today can't do it all by themselves. It takes all of us to work together.
Mike Baranek, president of the Iowa State Education Association, taught third grade in West Des Moines for 30 years. A lot of lucky kids out there with you in their past, Mike.
Well, thank you.
Art Tate, and the same to you from what I hear about your work as superintendent of Davenport Schools. Art and Mike, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, tomorrow, as our education series continues, race, politics, gender, of course, all contentious topics in our society. Tomorrow, as we continue with our education series, we'll look at how divisive subjects are handled in the classroom. How do teachers navigate the hot-button issues we see in our headlines? I hope you'll join our conversation tomorrow as our series continues. River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Caitlin Harrop. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.